This is season 5, episode 13 of Lug Radio, and as of the 26th of February this year, we moved into our triumphant 5th year of recording this shit. Can you believe it? Why are you looking at me like that?
Oh yeah, we did, yeah.
Just keep up.
Try and keep up, Johnny.
Jono struggles to work out.
This week on the show, we have clown shoes. We have HD DVD.
We talk about Microsoft and interoperability.
You have a go then, smart.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Season 5, Episode 13 of Lug Radio, and this is a very, very special show, indeed.
Because I'm here?
No.
8 is here.
Hello, everyone.
8 is studio.
Taking time off from being an international boy hero to be here for one.
Welcome back, 8. It's good to have you back in the studio.
It's kind of good to be back.
Try and sound convincing, my man.
We are damned.
This is the 33rd take of this.
But... The fact that Aidy's here is not why it's a special show. Why is it a special show?
Because it's their 4th birthday.
It is. Ooh, we are
4 years old.
As of the 26th of February.
Right. Indeed. Now, I feel considerably older, especially after last night.
Yeah, we went out last night, had a few drinks, and drunk some disgusting brews, shall we say.
Spent the entire night prancing behind some girl that looked like Shakira.
Yeah, and failing to pull her, Mr. Bacon. Anyway,
I never did any...
What's on the show today, anyway?
Well, I'll tell you what is on the show. Some fucking clown shoes are on the show. Mr. Sweet decided to arrive at the studio on a small red fire truck with some clown shoes and a bucket of tinsel.
They are ridiculous shoes, it has to be said.
All of the other stuff is not true. However, the clown shoes thing, I probably ought to take on the chin. Shut up.
We're also going to talk about mono and Axe modified views.
We're going to have a debate about HD DVD and Blu-ray.
Microsoft said that they're interoperable and it's all fantastic now. And
beer!
And we'll see whether we believe them or not, Mr. Bradshaw.
That nearly destroyed the drum kit with my chin.
And of course, we're going to be talking about Lug Radio Live in the US, and we've got some exhibitors to announce from our first batch. So it's all looking very, very good. So should we crack on?
I'm Aidy Bradshaw.
I'm Chris Proctor.
I'm Adam Sweet.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I appear to be a shipment of fail called John O'Bacon.
And we've also got Roger Light in the studio with us. Ujjal from the forums and from the Lug Radio community as a whole is videotaping the show.
Yeah. Well, not right now. Cap's on. Yeah, right. You might want to take the cap off, mate.
We run out of tape.
Bollocks. In the intro as well.
How does that work?
Oops.
Anyway, say hello, Roger.
Hello.
And you came out last night?
Yeah, I certainly did, yeah.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Thanks a lot.
That's
as we all did, I think.
Excellent. Wicked. So should we crack on?
Let's get on with it.
Regular listeners of Lug Radio may recall an interview that we did with Miguel de Caza quite some time ago. When was it, show?
Season 2.
Historian, thank you. And in that particular interview, a certain Stuart Ian Langridge may have been somewhat abusive towards the concept of mono. Not the disease, the whatever it is.
Or the eyebrow.
Or the block.
The bullock. Anyway, since that time, so that was the first instance of Axe views on mono, and then of course, one of the things that Axe wanted to do was to wear Miguel de Caza's skin.
That's an outrageous lie! I in no way wanted to.
Yes,
but
you did.
Said you would.
You wanted to
That's not
wear
the point.
His skin and destroy the mono project.
No, I didn't.
Amazingly.
Go back in time, wearing his skin and destroy the Mono Project. That's what you wanted to do.
Digressor 2.0.
Amazingly, the worm appears to have turned and now acts a Mono fanboy.
I don't think I'd go so far as to say I'm a Mono fanboy.
So we figured we should explore these depths and maybe ask him some questions. Because you've actually played with Mono, right?
Yes.
And come on then, what do you think?
Well, to be honest with you, my fears about it, there's been an awful lot of discussion recently, in the last sort of year or so, were people saying that Novell are trying to force the GNOME project to use Mono, and I was quite worried about that, but...
I remember.
But that appears to not be the case. You know, they haven't done that. And
so would you say that your point, insane tinfoil hat paranoid nutcase ramblings were wrong then?
on this particular occasion and on no other occasion, yes.
Okay,
so what do? You've developed something with Mono, yeah?
I've not done anything massively, massively serious with it.
Well, you developed a plugin, right?
I built an F-Spot plugin, which has to... The F-Spot plugins, because it's a Mono application, okay.
You released the source code, right?
No, because I wrote it under contract.
It's because you hate freedom, right?
It's because I wrote it under contract.
You want to shut up, proprietary VoIP boy.
hey, listen, I'm the only person in this room who went to FuzzDem this year again.
Yeah. So that makes you a freedom lover?
Absolutely.
Do you know how many fucking conferences I went to last year?
That's because someone else was paying now.
Do we care? pissing competition. Anyway, I believe we were talking about
Mono.
That's yes. Well,
just before we go on to that, I want to point out that Aid's got a point here, dude. But anyway,
I believe the sausage-fingered worm has turned.
tell us about Mono then. Why have you changed your mind about it?
I changed my mind about it because it turned out I was being unnecessarily paranoid, basically.
This was raised back then.
Yes.
Your whole problem with it was that it wasn't so much as a technology, it was because people were forcing it, possibly forcing it on the GNOME
community.
Your
fear was that it was going to open up the GNOME project to include stuff that was possibly patent encumbered. Submarine patents were one of your fears, weren't they?
I am still worried about the idea of submarine patents, but I'm now less convinced that it's a kind of plot on the part of the Mono people.
Is that some leather shoes for a submarine?
What? Why? Oh, your question is, what's a submarine patent?
Yes.
Right. The idea is, if you a company might patent something quietly, not let on, and then wait until... a technology that uses it becomes popular and then pop up and say, that's patented, now you have to buy loads of patent licenses off of us. Uh-huh. So it's a patent that you haven't noticed or...
That's not very British, is it?
No, that's absolutely not cricket, but people do it all the time. You know, it's why Nokia refused to implement Ogg Vorbis on their devices by default, for example, because they're worried about submarine patents, which affect the Ogg format, that sort of thing.
So, in terms of Mono as a technical platform for building applications, because you're no longer the hate monger that you were, how would you say it compares to, you know, you're a Python dude,
yeah,
and you know you've developed some stuff in Python and released it. How would you say it compares as a development platform for people producing applications?
It is a development platform.
But how does it compare? Compare and contrast.
I'm still a Python guy. That's not going to change. I still find Python to be a much nicer...
What's the Python development platform? Is that Vi, is it?
What do you mean the Python development platform?
That's what I'm asking. How do you develop in Python? You just open up Vi, do you?
Oh, right. The point is, what's the Python IDE? That's not a development platform.
Right, okay.
But... Yeah, there are Python IDEs, but I don't use any of them.
Because you're a real man, yeah.
In the same way that there are... Well, I was going to say there are Mono IDEs.
Jit all the way.
I'm a Jit person. There are Mono IDEs. There's one called Mono Develop.
Did you use them?
Apparently quite good. But I haven't used any of them, because I'm not writing large, complicated, integrated Mono projects.
In terms of, I mean, you've obviously looked into Mono in more detail.
Yeah.
How would you say it compares in terms of... So one of the things that's nice about Python, obviously, is that it's got quite a large library of functionality that you can use for doing all kinds of stuff. I'm assuming the same kind of thing exists for Mono.
I would say they are roughly equivalent in terms of the amount of core stuff that comes with them, Mono and Python. The .NET standard library, most of which has been re-implemented for Mono, is quite comprehensive on things, the sort of things that you get included with Python, like being able to go and fetch URLs, being able to do FTP, being able to authenticate, being able to read zip files, the whole Python standard library, most of that's there for Mono as well.
So as
part of .NET, there seems to be a... There are more Python bindings to things, but Mono people tend to be able to write bindings faster. So for a given library, there's quite often Python bindings for it, and there's quite often not Mono bindings for it. But the sort of people who use Mono seem to be in a position to say, there aren't bindings for that library, I'll write some.
So are there more Python bindings just because it's been around longer?
It's possible that it's just been around longer.
Mono programmers are actually programmers.
Possibly.
Right.
Mono demands a bit more...
What the hell does that mean, by the way?
Well, Python's just a scripting language, right?
So you're telling me that you've always said that C is a so-called man's language, right?
Yes, that's right.
C++ is.
That's right.
Right. And Mono is.
Yeah, why not?
But Python isn't.
Carry on.
Do you even understand your own brain? Because you're certainly fucking confusing us.
This morning, I don't understand my brain.
So is there any kind of reason? I mean, there's been a... Back on topic.
Meanwhile, back at the point,
yeah. There's kind of been this push to for GNOME to move towards Mono from various places. Is there any real... Well, but is there any real advantages to doing that rather than moving towards...
I don't think that's fair. Okay. I think people are
writing... People have discussed it, should we say.
People have discussed the idea that there should be a kind of blessed environment for GNOME, where...
And that should be Mono. That has been...
Well, yeah, but people have also discussed that it should be Python or Java, or C, with
Mono's been the controversial topic.
Right, but, yeah. Okay, so, but is there, in your opinion, then any advantage in that argument for Mono?
This is what I'm trying to get at, is would you say for GNOME application development, if somebody has no background in either Mono or Python, which one would be the best environment for people to choose? Ignoring all of this, you know.
So we're not talking about blessing one of these languages into the GNOME core. We're talking about just building a GNOME application.
Yeah, if I was to sit down and decide to build a GNOME application this afternoon... I don't program either Mono or Python, so which one shall I start with?
I would say Python, but there's not much in it, and I'm a Python partisan. I'm not sure I can realistically answer that question entirely... justifiably one way or the other.
There's no sort of dramatic, you've not come across anything that makes you go, wow, Mono is kind of better for this.
It seems that Mono develop is a significant attractive element.
That's the IDE, is it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Mono develop.
Can you just drag things onto forms and then...
Well, it's got a built-in, I think they call it static, which is a built-in, like a built-in Glade type thing.
Form designer. Yeah.
And it seems nicely integrated in many ways.
And Mono has to use Glade, right? Is that right?
It doesn't have to.
I think static was a fork of Glade. I don't know that 100%. I think it was a fork of Glade. And then I think some of that became Glade 3.
I've got a question for you. You said in the past that Perl doesn't fit in your brain.
Yeah.
And Python does. How does Mono... Oh, I guess it's C-sharp, isn't it?
Mono, interestingly, I don't know whether this is coincidence or whether the Python people got it right and it's the logical way to build libraries or whether the .NET people copied the way Python's laid out. But... they seem to work in quite similar kind of ways in where the libraries are and what they're called and so on. One of the reasons I like Python is if I think I'd love to be able to do this, I wonder if it exists. I guess at what it's called and where it might be, I'm quite often right.
But isn't C Sharp based on Java?
No.
But
right, what do you mean by based on?
I
mean,
isn't it
a very similar language when you read through it?
They're similar-ish, but to be honest with you, any C++ is fairly similar to Java. If you're going to have a language which has got classes and objects and uses braces for to delimit a block, then they're going to look similar.
Yeah.
You know.
We're talking about C sharp, but I mean the whole point of .NET is the fact you can use multiple different languages. Is Mono essentially C sharp at the moment?
Well, I was hugely disappointed about this because I thought. Take a step back. Answering your actual question first.
That would be nice.
As I understand it, the Mono C Sharp stuff is far and away the most advanced. You can do VB.NET on Mono, I think, but I don't know that much about it. The ASP.NET stuff is mostly there, I think. But last time I looked at it, there seemed to be some problems with deploying ASP.NET applications on top of Mono. And... there's things like, the thing that disappointed me was when I thought, you know, got this FBOT plugin. I thought, well, there's IronPython, isn't there? There's Python on top of
that. I was wondering, Helen, before you mentioned that.
So I thought, that's what I'll do. I'll write it in that. But it turns out that I was under the impression, and this is where my technical knowledge starts to break down a bit. I thought you wrote an application in, say, Python.NET, IronPython, whatever, or you wrote it in C Sharp, or you wrote it in VB.NET, and then you just compiled it down to like bytecodes or something.
Yeah. Isn't there some kind of intermediate language?
And then, the CIL is the intermediate language, and that runs atop the CLR, which is like the Java Virtual Machine. That's how I thought it worked. So I thought you'd write it in any .NET language you liked, then compile it down to whatever, and then just distribute your compiled DLL, like compiling to an executable. Yeah. But that's not how it is. If you write something in IronPython, you have to have like the IronPython runtime with it.
That sucks.
So you can't just write things in IronPython and then distribute them like you'd written them in C Sharp. So, to my mind, one of the really big advantages of .NET kind of goes away. It probably was never an advantage. I probably misunderstood it right from the beginning. But you can't just do an IronPython F-spot plugin and then give it to someone who doesn't have IronPython. Hugely disappointed when I discovered that.
I thought I was under the same impression you were.
Yeah. So I mean, you may find I've just totally misunderstood how it was supposed to work, but I thought that was one of the big advantages of it.
Getting back to the reason why your views have changed, you're breathing into the microphone.
It might be me, actually.
Really?
No, I'm not breathing into the microphone.
It's you, isn't it?
I have vacuous nostrils.
It's from all the cocaine.
Yeah. The listeners should be told that we had an email due to the stereo production of the last episode. Someone shooed us for someone was breathing into the microphone. It's typically Ack, but it may actually be Aid. I apologise.
No,
Ack.
It was me and
Adam.
Meanwhile,
back at the point.
Back at the point. Anyway, going back to the original reason why you've changed your views, do you therefore believe that has something changed in the mono world that means that you don't think that anymore, or do you believe that mono is not the risk that you originally thought it to be?
There were two separate risks. The risk that there are submarine patents or things like that which apply where we'll increasingly use mono, and then Microsoft will pop up and find some way to fuck us up. Right? I can't necessarily think of however they'll fuck us up, but God knows if they could think of a way of fucking us up, they'd do it.
And they've recently abstracted all the bits that could be affected by IP problems, haven't they?
I don't know enough to assess that kind of question.
I remember someone saying that they'd put
that,
all those
that was one of my risks. And that risk is still apparent, I think. But the thing I was worried about was that we'd end up being moved more and more towards mono because a large proportion of the people hacking on GNOME applications and core GNOME stuff were being employed by Novell. And I was worried they might shape the desktop in that direction. But that doesn't seem to have happened. I was basically unjustified in accusing Novell of, or worrying about the fact that Novell would have done that. So fact that time has passed and they haven't done that suggests to me that they weren't going to.
Traditionally, when you have a view of that, or when a lot, not just you, but when a lot of people have a view, it's the view never changes traditionally because people say, well, there still is always a risk.
There is a risk, but I think Novell have, I mean, I still don't like the cross-license patents thing, but a lot of the fears that people had about Novell, you know, a big company were going to basically come and muscle in and use the fact that they have money to buy control over the GNOME desktop.
I think,
it hasn't happened.
In November, or I think it was, I think Jeff Wall was quite at pains to stress that this isn't the case. So I think that as a fear has lessened. I think one thing probably Ack was worried about was that core libraries were going to start being written in mono, which then brings us to the first problem. Which is, in 3 years down the line, a large part of GNOME is written in mono or C# or runs on the mono runtime, and then Microsoft are going to appear and say, sorry, boys.
That's the point. Imagine Microsoft did do that. Imagine they had some way of screwing up people who use mono. I mean, Miguel...
Like KDE users happy, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, Miguel and the mono team are at pains to suggest that can't happen. And
Microsoft have changed?
I don't think so.
They're all about the freedom.
They're saying that can't happen. Not that Microsoft wouldn't do it if they had the chance, but Microsoft don't have the chance. Now, I don't know enough to assess that. But imagine Microsoft did pop up and say, oh, we fucked up a load of people who use mono. At that point, you know, Tomboy goes away, and that would be sad. And Beagle goes away, and that would be sad. And F-Spot goes away, and that would be sad. But it's not going to kill us. If 3/4 of the GNOME desktop is written in it, the GNOME core platform, and you've got to unwind all those changes, it's suddenly quite a big problem.
So do you believe that you're quite happy it being used in isolated cases, but you wouldn't want significant chunks of the desktop using mono? Because
that's broadly my...
There's a big fucking bun fight in the GNOME world right now, isn't there, over the fact that, you know, people want chunks of GNOME written in.
I mean, they have a reasonable argument. The reason for using mono is precisely that it's quicker to develop things, you can do more stuff, so on and so forth. But, I mean, the Python people have got the same argument, and the Java people have got the same argument. And so far, it hasn't happened, because people are worried about moving away from pure C because it's not quite as fast, so on and so forth.
Jono, have you ever been involved in an actual gun fight?
Yes.
But it's really fun, isn't it?
That actually doesn't surprise me.
So there we have it, listeners. Treasure and savour this moment. Ack has accepted he was wrong on mono. And that's... rare, to be honest. Fucking rare.
It happens.
It happens, and good man for you know, a bit into it.
So, the Blu-ray versus HD-DVD format war is over. A tells me that format wars are fun, and it wasn't, but now...
Betamax won, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. No one gives a shit about HD-DVD anymore.
Apart from the people who own it, obviously, own players.
Ha! Losers.
I think the point is that no one owns players. You know,
how pissed off are you going to be if you went out and bought a fucking player and there's going to be no more discs?
This is why you don't go out and spend £1,000 on a player for some new format.
Because it's only going to be AV nutters that are going to be out and bought it.
The HD players were much cheaper than Blu-ray ones, though, weren't they?
Really? Yeah. No.
Yeah, I thought they were.
PlayStation 3.
Ignoring the PlayStation 3 for the moment.
Which is the main Blu-ray player.
Yes, it is. That's why I said ignoring it for the moment. If you went and bought an actual Blu-ray DVD player, you didn't want a PlayStation.
I don't know. Do they exist? Do we care?
The PlayStation 3 can't be the only Blu-ray player on the market, surely.
Ah, there are players.
Yeah, it's not the only one, but it's possibly the most significant by miles.
Yeah.
Miles, 99%. Miles. And possibly the reason for the ruin of format
basically, yeah.
Well, yeah, so the point here is, do we care? Is there any relevance to us?
Well, I think this is interesting because...
I've got a PlayStation 3, says John.
I've got a PlayStation... Well, I think it's interesting because traditionally, Sony are shit when it comes to formats. Because they always force it down people's necks and they fuck it up.
And that hasn't happened.
And they produce a bunch of crappy formats that ultimately fail, right?
And crappy's probably unfair. If I had to characterise Sony, I would say they're very good at... their stuff tends to be technically better. Betamax, you mentioned earlier, is a perfect example. I'm told by video people that Betamax is better than VHS. Mm. I don't know whether it is.
Do you then say care?
Yeah, however, they then bugger up the stewardship of the format.
Now, yeah, so it's interesting because, you know, like things like...
I invent a new connector for everything.
It seems
they are. I mean, yes, they do that, but they're not the only company guilty of that.
I'm assuming that some kind of format obsessive nutter is going to write in and tell us that we're all wrong about everything we discussed in this segment. But it seems that Sony have
that would be imagine different. That
Sony haven't. Am I wrong in thinking that Sony haven't had a huge success with a particular format yet? Like, I know they've had success, obviously, with things like mini disc and things like that.
The Walkman.
It sounds like. But the Walkman's not a format, is it? Knob end. But
I can't think of anything Sony developed and Sony stewarded which has properly owned the market.
Now, is this not the problem with potential problem with Blu-ray, though, is because Sony are very... what they do is they create these formats and then they're very proprietary about
it
them.
It seems they hold on there to is a consortium.
There is a Blu-ray consortium.
My, you know... 3.5 hours of research this morning.
that would be 15 seconds.
It seems that there's a consortium with people like...
Wikipedia.com/Blu-ray.
I think there's, Apple, Samsung, Sharp, I think, a few other...
Sharp was still
going. Dell, HP, I think a few others. But it seems that if this is successful, and it looks like the game's already been decided, that Blu-ray is going to become the next major format for, obviously, movies and stuff like that. That's a pretty massive win for Sony.
Yeah,
I've pretty much decided I'm not going to bother with HD. Skip it. DVDs are fine as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a big television.
If Sony are going to win, then fuck it, I'm not going to have one.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
So, fuck it. DVDs are fine.
Yeah, but...
I don't have a massive screen like you.
At some point, you know...
DVDs aren't going to go away.
You say it's just Sony
at some point.
If somebody else had won, would you care? Or you...
If HD DVD had won rather than Blu-ray,
you'd be happy with it.
I would be happier. So even though it's backed by Microsoft.
Why the HD?
Because quite honestly, I hate Sony.
I mean, okay.
It's just Apple on board, isn't it? Yeah, right.
No, because they're both as bad as each other, and it didn't surprise me in the least that Apple were on board at this.
I have a certain amount of sympathy with your viewpoint. I don't buy Sony stuff for precisely that reason. But, and I frankly don't care about HD. I don't care about HD broadcast. I don't care about HD video. None of that.
It's just something that's going to happen whether you choose to take part or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Is it, though? Or are people just going to stick with DVDs?
It's just going to happen.
No, it will happen.
So many people have already got DVD players. There's no... unless you've got a massive screen.
It'll take time, but
there's
it will
no real reason to...
But there is one good reason, but I don't know if anyone will actually do it. Instead of saying, okay, you know, currently on a DVD you can get, say, 3 episodes of a show,
yeah,
for example, and they could say, okay, here's a HD version of that, so you get 3 episodes of a HD version of that show.
Two discs.
It would be jolly nice if instead of that they said, okay, here's 22 episodes of a show in DVD quality on a Blu-ray DVD. That'd be great. instead of, you know, if you buy a series of a show, it's sort of six DVDs. Mm-hmm. It'd be great if it was one Blu-ray DVD, but I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to use the fact that Blu-ray's got more stuff to give you higher quality videos, but the same amount of it, which I find really annoying. I
think part of the logic to that might be the fact that people are saying it also make TVs, and if they can persuade you to move to HD, then you have to buy a new TV, and therefore they make more money.
The thing is as well, though, it's not, you know, the move to HD is obviously not just Sony. I mean, the move to HD is something that's, I think, one of the problems with HD is that unless you've actually seen some good HD video, you know, like a film or whatever, people think, well, whatever. I mean, I like Aid says, you know, I like the quality of DVD. DVD's really high quality. I'm not massively fazed about HD, but I am interested in it. And when you do watch, like, we watched Casino Royale when we were doing some Log Radio stuff the other weekend, Adam and I and his missus, and the quality is significant. But it will obviously move over there at some point, and, you know, but it requires so much momentum. You know, the TV stations have got to move out. Like, the BBC have got HD channels now, and Sky have got HD.
To me, it's just going to happen, whether you choose to participate or not. Eventually, things are just going to be all HD, and you have, and that's what you're going to buy.
I think the thing that's interesting is that...
I think we're a long way away from that.
I don't think we are. I think it's going to be a lot quicker than you expect.
I mean, 3 to 5 years, to me.
Yeah. I reckon it's going to be quicker than the move from VHS to DVD. Because, like, there was a lot of VHS holdouts for a while. And DVD took a while to kind of take off. It really took, what, 2 years, 3 years before DVD really took out from the first player coming out? That really took off?
Are you joking? What about 2 years?
Something like that. Susan.
No, I would have said it took 10 years.
I'm talking about the first
from
reasonably affordable consumer players.
From a DVD player coming on the market at a grand or whatever, the same price as HD DVD players or Blu-ray players apart from the PlayStation 3, you know, that sort of thing, to the point where you could routinely assume that if people had a video playback device in their house and only one, it would be a DVD player rather than VHS. I reckon that was a decade.
Like I just said, I'm not talking that far back. I'm talking about affordable DVD players coming out. So Susan went out and bought a DVD player, and it was £280, right? It's expensive, but it's affordable.
Okay.
Right? And that was around 1998, 1999. Yeah. And then I think DVD really started kicking ass probably in 2002, 2003.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have said later than that. I'd have said you were talking about... At the point where you could assume, if you were putting out a film, then it was reasonable to say, we're only going to put it out on DVD, not on VHS. I would have said that was 2005 or so. So you're talking about 7 years.
So I think it'll be quicker going to HD because there's a bit more momentum going over there. And obviously the PlayStation 3 is a significant driving force behind Blu-ray. And interestingly, Blu-ray does seem to be a better format.
Which is good news.
One other very brief thing. I don't know whether this is the case, but presumably you can use a Blu-ray DVD not for films, for data storage.
Yeah, who even knows?
Yeah,
well, I imagine you can't.
The beauty of that, then, is at the moment, you know, DVDs used to be useful for backup, but now you're trying to back up 80 gigabytes onto a DVD, and you got to back it up onto 20 DVDs, and that's really annoying.
So you're saying there's a Blu-ray writer, is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't believe they exist yet, but presumably they will.
They do exist.
I don't believe they exist in any kind of sane, reasonable way. If you want to buy one for your computer, you've got to pay, you know, £900 for it, and the discs are £4 each or something.
Right.
But when they become reasonable, that'd be dead good for backups.
I mean, it's...
I think by that point, your backup is even larger than than the Blu-ray.
I can't think what the hell else they can give us at the moment. This is, you know...
If everything's going to be in high definition, then your porn collection is suddenly going to be 380 gig instead of 80 gig.
This is true. Of course, where it's interesting as well is Microsoft with the Xbox. They released the Xbox Elite, I think it's called, which has got the HD player in it. Your shipment fail has arrived. I'd be really fucking pissed.
It amused me. Only a month ago, Microsoft said they were committed to HD DVD and it was the best format for consumers and they would not be shipping a Blu-ray version.
I assume that's now going to change. I mean, the interesting thing about that is you had to buy a special Xbox 360 that could do HD DVD, whereas everybody who bought a PlayStation 3, even if they don't care about Blu-ray or HD or movies at all, they just happen to have a Blu-ray player. So Sony could then go to the movie studios and say there are already 8 million people who own a PlayStation 3, all of whom are potential Blu-ray customers. There are 9 guys who own an Xbox 360 Elite.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting the fact that the game consoles have become that significant to the rest of the market. If the Blu-ray player comes with the games console, then it wins. If the HD DVD player is an optional kind of buy the NEDS model up kind of thing, then it loses. It's, that's how significant the game consoles have been to this
Time. I think the figures, last time I looked, the Wii had sold about 10 million and the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox were about 8 million apiece. The Xbox 360.
What's the copy protection like on a Blu-ray film? Is it
unbelievable?
Right.
Again, they can't with another copy protection scheme after the last one was broken and so on and so forth.
The thing is what arguably
is there an equivalent Blu-ray John? Like there was a DVD John.
People are working on the Blu-ray stuff, and it has been.
It has been
more broken. They use broadcast encryption, which is quite clever actually.
Yeah.
The thing but is,
all the thing with
and
the
they can revoke keys.
This is all
stuff,
the thing with the different keys and key revocation and stuff. But the Doom 9 people appear to be on top of the problem. They haven't quite worked it out yet, but you can now rip and
the firmware gets upgraded things. on your Blu-ray player as well. So you can upgrade, when they crack it, they'll no doubt update how it works or something.
There's an interesting series of articles on Freedom to Tinker about HD movie encryption and how people are working around it and what the problems with it are and so on, so have a look at that.
But I'd say arguably one of the reasons why DVD took off as well was because the PlayStation 2 had a DVD player in it. That was the only games console that had DVD support in it initially. If I remember rightly, on that generation of games consoles. And the PlayStation 2 sold a shitload of consoles. And that's, a lot of people went out and bought a PlayStation 2 because they weren't just getting a good games console, but they were getting a DVD player as well. And I think that's part of the thing with the PlayStation 3 is that obviously you get, like, access, you get a Blu-ray player, you can play DVDs, you can play games.
So then, do you think this means, right, that Sony then own us for the rest of our days?
Own you.
Own you?
Yeah.
Do they own you?
Nah, I don't think so. In the same way that
Are we not just basically Sony's bitches, and we're going to use whatever
they come
up with while they're dominating the console market?
I think that
they aren't dominating the console market.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Nintendo dominate the console market.
The thing is, no, they're not.
Yes, they are. They're the biggest selling console.
Nintendo are not dominating the console market.
They're the biggest selling console.
They're not by any.
Yes, they are. Hang on.
They are selling more consoles the month that you looked at it, right? It fluctuates constantly, right?
No, it doesn't. The Nintendo Wii consistently has sold more and is continuing to sell
region?
More than the Sony PlayStation.
But the thing is, Nintendo don't make high definition.
No, I agree with you.
So, I mean, what I'm basically, are we just going to be victims of whatever format Sony chooses to push their PlayStations?
I think that the people who, like the arbiters of a format, are fundamentally at the will of the studios. I think Sony have got a lot of control, but it's going to be Warner Brothers and Paramount and people like that are going to have the real control. In the same way that, you know, the people behind CD, who was that, Philips?
Philips. Yeah.
You know,
at the end of the day, the film studios themselves are still consumers of a format. So
yes.
They are there themselves held to ransom by the format producers.
Not really. I mean, Sony always going to have a big. Anyone who manages to put 8 million players of a format in people's houses before they start saying let's use this format, always going to have quite a lot of power in the market. Mm. But that doesn't necessarily mean that people are beholden to that. It just means that Sony have quite a convincing argument on their side.
They also control some of the movie studios, of course, which is kind of a help.
Sony being a big conglomerate does help with this because they can use the PlayStation arm to push stuff, which then Sony BMG pick up on or whatever.
Yeah. Microsoft recently issued a press release about how they're going to interact with the open source world
in the interoperable stakes.
The interoperable stakes, indeed. We've had four
like
major
a shit
points.
Horse race, doesn't it?
Interoperable stakes.
This afternoon on the interoperable stakes, we have.
I mean, there were basically four major points.
I was assuming that was like a big piece of rump steak in like the shape of a key.
A key.
Whatever. Point while at the back. Yeah, there are four major points, and my glorious assistant is going to read them out.
Are you the Debbie McGee?
The glamorous Jonathan Baker.
I'm restraining myself from saying beautiful.
So anyway, there actually appears to be five points.
Okay,
I don't know whether they added one, but we're a bit confused about this.
I think they started counting at zero.
This was on February the 21st they released this, so... These are the interoperable things, and we'll talk about each of them. The first thing they say is, ensuring open connections to Microsoft's high-volume products, right? To enhance connections with third-party products, Microsoft will publish on its website documentation for all application programming interfaces. That's APIs, by the way.
Beard! hang on.
And communications protocols on its high-volume products that are used by other Microsoft products. Developers do not need to take a license or pay a royalty or other fee to access this information, and open access to this documentation will ensure that third-party developers can connect to Microsoft's high-volume products, just as Microsoft's other products do.
So this will be things like MAPI, which is what Exchange speaks.
Well, importantly as well, it says Microsoft is providing a covenant not to sue open-source developers for development or non-commercial distribution of implementations of these protocols.
Notice the important word there, non-commercial.
Yeah.
So Red Hat can't distribute.
So I suspect
you've got to absolutely love the fact that they say, "Okay, we're going to document an interface, and then we're going to promise not to sue anybody who actually reads the documentation and does it." Like we used to sue people for actually talking to our software. Yeah. It's nuts.
So it seems. I mean, they say that it's going to be over 30,000 pages of documentation. For Windows client and server protocols that were previously available only under trade secret license. So this sounds like they're going to be, you know, so it's good. I think we should encourage them.
We will be able to
have open source implementations that will be able to talk to their things and not be sued.
Yeah, this means that Thunderbird will be able to use Exchange.
So the thing is,
and OpenOffice will be able to open PowerPoints and...
Theoretically, yes. Yeah. So the thing is, I'm assuming that commercial redistribution will involve someone signing a patent agreement with Microsoft.
That's, you say Word documents. This specific point isn't about that. It's not about file formats. It's about on the wire protocols.
Oh, is it?
As far as I can tell. Things like MAPI, so Thunderbird can talk to Exchange, perfect example.
And Active Directory.
Number two. Shall I go on to number two? Because this is it gets interesting. Documenting how Microsoft supports.
You say that Bruce Forsyth.
I did appear to have a stroke just for a second there. Documenting how.
Not for the first time.
Hello, sailor. Documenting how Microsoft supports industry standards and extensions to increase transparency and promote interoperability, which are obviously things that Microsoft likes to do. Fucking beard. When Microsoft supports a standard in a high volume product. High volume. It will work with other major implementers of the standard towards achieving robust, consistent, and interoperable implementations across a broad range of widely deployed products. So Microsoft will document for the development community how it supports such standards, including those Microsoft extensions that affect interoperability with other implementations of these standards.
Is that the word document?
That just sounded like a long list of words to me. Like, didn't actually say anything.
It doesn't actually say an awful lot, does it?
At any point, do they define what they mean by high volume?
I think that's referring to things like Office and Windows.
I know what a high volume product is. Like, product!
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Yeah, that was a predictable joke.
Fucking remove my headphones.
But they presumably it is SQL Server Exchange. But what I mean, there's more obscure stuff that they produce. That I can't think of.
Not high volume, I guess.
But the stuff that's trying to.
I think it's general purpose software that they sell a shitload of. So it's probably not going to be specific kind of.
I mean, they do
custom,
things like claims, for example.
Stuff for government and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think so. I think this is so they can say, we're not going to document the Microsoft Publisher file format, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, not a high volume.
There's a lot of Microsoft Publisher out there.
There is, but.
So, you mean, is that.
Yeah, but I think we should give them a bit of credit in the fact that they're focused on the stuff that we actually care about.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas they're basically saying it's shit that no one cares about, we ain't going to bother with.
It's all words at the minute, though, isn't it?
It is, of course, but we'll get to that. We'll discuss that in a bit. So, next one is enhancing Office 2007 to provide greater flexibility of document formats. To promote user choice among document formats, Microsoft will design new APIs for the Word, Excel, and PowerPoint applications in Office 2007 to enable developers to plug in additional document formats and to enable users to set these formats as their default for saving documents. I think that's fucking brilliant.
I think that's
But they have to add it in, don't they?
Eh?
For the sounds of it.
You have to develop your ODF plugin, and then you have to set it as the default on your Word, and you have to assume everybody else in the world does. But the point is that
at least you will have decent ODF support in Word.
Here's the thing, right? And this is important. Microsoft are not going to make ODF the default format for Word. I mean, they're just not, right? Yeah. We would like if they would.
No,
but they're not going to.
But they should support it in the default product.
Would be handy.
They should.
They as I understand it, they are, Microsoft, are either contributing to, or contributing to the funding of, or actually funding someone to build the ODF, the format plugin for Word. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I believe it's the case.
What, I think that's part of the agreement with Novell, is that they're developing the plugin for
Word. Whether they will ship it out of the box with Word or not.
Absolutely won't.
No, but the point is here is that we can't expect Microsoft to stick on by default in their product a non-Microsoft file format. It just ain't going
to
happen.
But not to make it the default. No, but at least
there's going to be support there that people can plug in, and you can set it as a user to be default.
I mean, they do with stuff like WordPerfect and stuff created in Lotus Notes and stuff like that. But they are going to look at ODF as a minority format and not ship it by default. But
if it's I don't believe that for a second.
They're not going to ship ODF by default.
I'm not necessarily saying they're not going to ship
part of the product.
They might not ship it by default, but the point is, I mean, we got to be careful to not expect the moon on stick.
Well, I'm with you there. I don't see any reason for them to do that. It would be nice if they did. But
it's an easy pledge to make when you know that because it's so obscure and so hard to actually set it up, everyone's going to stick to using Word. If you've got Word installed in your Word format.
But we can't expect the moon on a stick. Microsoft are putting an olive branch out there in this regard. And put in support for other formats in there.
There's a kind of a sliding scale of stuff they could do. They could totally ignore ODF and fight against it. They could allow other people to write an ODF plugin. They could allow other people to write an ODF plugin and help that plugin be written. They could ship that plugin with Word. When you buy Word, you get the plugin. Or they could make that plugin be the default file format.
I think those are the five options.
I think we'd like to see the ODF plugin come with Word. So if you buy a copy of Word in a shop and put it in, it will read ODF. And if you want to, you can save as ODF. What we're trying to decide here, I assume, is whether they're going to do that or whether they're going to say, if you want ODF, go to odf.microsoft.com and download it. But you have to know about it. It does sound quite to me clearly like it's the latter. And to my mind,
it's better than nothing.
There's a big distinction. If they're actually committed to interoperability, who was it said about Lotus 1-2-3, Adam? You know, they don't say, if you want Lotus 1-2-3 file format, go to somewhere and download the format plugin. They ship it with it by default.
Yeah, but that's, you could say that they're not committed to interoperability if they don't ship every possible file format.
The thing is,
Every possible file format that the thing supports. I mean, if they said, right, WordPerfect files, we're going to make it so you have to download a WordPerfect thingy. Right, from somewhere separate.
Yeah, but in my mind, a commitment to interoperability as a core level is ensuring that other file formats can be plugged into Office. Whether they ship it or not is irrelevant. The fact is that Office will be able to be used with a non-Microsoft file format. To me, that is it's not the end of the road.
It already is. But I think Lotus 1-2-3 is a non-Microsoft file format.
They basically promised the theoretical possibility of doing this, and yeah, great, fair enough. But in practice, it'll mean nothing.
But I completely disagree. What they're doing is they're providing an open API in which people can put file format support into Office. To me, that's a step forward. That's a good thing.
The fact is here, really, to me, you can do it. And they're supporting
those. If you really want.
Yeah, I mean, the people that want to, shut up, piss taker. The people that are actually going to care about it are going to be able to get what they want from it, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Governments and people like governments who want their data to be portable between Office applications can do it. They're supporting Lotus 1-2-3 and Coral WordPerfect because those products were previously the de facto standard word processor in their time. And so it's a compatibility win for Microsoft to support those formats.
Yeah.
It brings customers in. They're not going to do that with ODF, but at least we can use ODF if we want to.
And to me, it's like, the one thing that irritates me about some aspects of the open source community is that we expect the moon on a fucking stick when someone puts a step forward. And this is a gradual process in my mind. That to me is a good thing. It's not the perfect thing. Perfect, like Ak was saying, ideally we'd like it to be shipped with the open document format plugin. At least so you can choose to it, and it's with the product. Whether it's on by default is another level.
I think the distinction, though, you say it's a gradual process, yes, I agree with you. But there's no reason why they can't say, we are moving towards a status where ODF support is in the product by default, but currently we're only doing the first step, which is you can go and download it separately.
But they might not
have Service Pack 1.
But that's assuming that they've got to that point in their thought process. I think this is a first step, and then it wouldn't surprise me down the line if that does happen.
What's the next bullet point?
The next bullet point is launching.
Thanks for that on hold music.
Your bullet point is important to us. Launching the Open Source Interoperability Initiative.
Right.
Hang on. Hold your engines. To promote and enable...
Is that the OII?
It is, yes.
Chris Waddle.
Oi!
Oi! Oi. Hey. To promote and enable more interoperability between commercial and community-based open source technologies and Microsoft products, this initiative will provide resources, facilities, and events, including labs, plug fests, technical content...
That sounds like something I don't want to attend.
It sounds like something on Bang Brothers. Anyway, technical content and opportunities for ongoing cooperative development. That, to me, sounds like hand-wavy bollocks.
Well,
I don't know what that means.
As far as I can tell, what that means is that if you take point one, where they say we're gonna document the APIs that Microsoft products use to talk to one another,
yeah,
we will then actually help open source people to implement those APIs, which is fine and everything. Mm. But I think given the choice between Microsoft helping us to do stuff that we'd like to do but don't quite have the time, and Microsoft saying we'll open up more stuff and then how you implement it is your problem, I think people would like the second. So instead of them saying we're going to devote some money to helping the open source community implement these documented stuff, we'd rather they said, here's more stuff that we've documented, now implement it yourselves.
Mm.
If that's the choice between the two, yeah.
But that doesn't appear to be the choice.
This is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
They're actually beginning to...
If they're going to do it.
If they actually do, depends how it turns out, of course, it could be kind of like, you know...
Yeah, thing, interesting.
We've gone beyond first they ignore you.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And the last one is expanding industry outreach and dialogue. An ongoing dialogue with customers, developers, and open source communities will be created through an online interoperability forum. In addition, a document interoperability initiative will be launched to address data exchange between widely deployed formats. These last two bullet points, I think, sound like bullshit because Microsoft have said this shit before, this type of stuff
they
before,
have.
And they've come through with precisely fuck
they've
all.
They've repeatedly said, we have a commitment to interoperability. I mean, this is a firm who believe that this software is cross-platform, means it works on more than one version of Windows. The Microsoft people specifically told us, they said, oh yeah, now that's what we've meant in the past, but it's different now. And so far it hasn't been different.
No, there has been no difference coming forth.
Yeah, I think, to me it seems like what's going on, you know, looking at all of these things together, is that Microsoft have realised that they need to be actually interoperable with other organisations.
I think they've realised they need to be seen to be.
No, I think they actually realise that they actually do need to be.
There are two points here for me. First of all, I said this on a Lug mailing list recently. To me, this whole thing reeks of just an ingratiating smile towards the EC, who are suing their ass off in over in Europe for their thingy. Whatever. Somebody come up with a word.
Yeah, for their failure to meet their interoperability promises.
Yes. Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, there's got to be a driving force.
I mean, there is ongoing dialogue. I mean, we attended something recently, Jono and I, with Microsoft, and obviously the whole Lug Radio team have been to the Microsoft campus before.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is an ongoing dialogue, but I think they really are.
Think Microsoft have aside from the ingratiating smile to the European Commission, I think they've realised that in the long term, Linux is their biggest threat. And it worries me slightly that they're offering the olive branch, because I wonder whether the olive branch is tainted. But
how can it be tainted?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think
we've got to be conscious to not freak out and be paranoid when Microsoft do something that actually might be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I know. I'm a conspiracy theorist, so I worry about things like this unnecessarily. But why would you go out of your way to help your biggest competitor?
But it's not what Microsoft are doing. I mean, I don't think I'll believe it when I see it. You know, Microsoft have done this shit before. But looking at the way I see it is that looking at the last sort of 3 or 4 years of Microsoft and what they've done, or let's say the last 5 years, 5 years ago, well, around the XP sort of time, the thing that they were predominantly being hammered on consistently was security.
Mm-hmm.
They got hammered to the back of the fucking woods and back with security. And to be fair to them, they really focused on that and they fixed a lot of those problems, right? The problem that they've got right now, I think, is that they changed. Microsoft had a complete corporate-wide change when they moved to .NET, and they changed their entire business to accommodate their new development platform with .NET, and they successfully did that. And that's doing that on that level of scale is pretty impressive. I think that they thought they could do that with Vista, and that they could change everything around this new exciting operating system, and they've over-engineered it, and Vista is a complete fucking catastrophe. And I think what they've realized as well is that I think that the problem with Vista has made them refocus on their entire business. And it wouldn't surprise me if they had extensive strategic meetings right at the top. And of course, Ray Ozzie came in. And the thing that I've heard on the grapevine from Microsoft people that I know is that he's actually...
Who's Ray Ozzie?
Ray Ozzie is the new guy who's in charge. He's basically stood in for where Gates has moved out. Okay. Gates is concentrating on the Gates Foundation.
I think chief technical architect or something.
Something like that, yeah.
He's like head technical guy, and Steve Ballmer's
head
suit guy.
Does he wear little blue rain glasses?
No.
Oh, right.
It's nothing to do with Ozzy Osbourne.
Right, okay.
But I think that what happened is Ray Ozzie came in and, they fucked up with Vista. And what they've probably done is they said, okay, we've got the threat of Linux, we've got the threat of this.
Threat of Apple?
Threat of Apple. We've fucked up with Vista. We need to reassess our entire business. And I think that's what's happened. I think him coming in anyway, he would have reassessed a significant part of the business. And they've realized...
I don't see how this is part of the strategy to recover, though.
But what I think they've done is they've discovered that back in the day, Microsoft could be a dominant player, but today the world has changed, and now they've realized...
I really would like to believe that they sat there in these meetings, and they said, okay, we may have fucked up in various places, and then they looked at the world and thought, okay, the world is no longer in a position where we can dictate what happens and everything goes along with it. We have to talk to other people. It's going to be better for us in the long run if we don't just shut out the rest of the market and do our own thing and then win. It's going to be better for us if we're a big part of the large solution. However, it's not at all clear to me that that's actually the case. It does feel rather like if you gave them the choice and said you can either be open or you can appear to be open and not actually be open, then they'd pick the latter still.
I think that what Microsoft want to do is I think they want to, and I don't see anything wrong with this, but I think they want to actually allow interoperability. But what they do want to do is they want to make sure that people are using Microsoft products.
Yeah, I think they probably, as Ak was saying, I think they probably recognize that the Linux threat isn't going away, and they're getting hammered on the interoperability thing, and people are actually running Linux in mixed environments.
Yeah.
And they have to interoperate to survive in the long term.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe. Whether they act, I think this is probably step 0.1. I mean, I think the sea change has actually been coming for about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But
you can imagine that, when Ozzy came in, you can imagine him saying...
Don't say Ozzy, because I think Osbourne.
You can imagine when Ray came in. When Ray came in, right? The O-Man. The fucking O-Man. When the O-Man came in, right? You can imagine him sort of saying, well, hang on a second, right? We're getting fucked by...
I bet he didn't say that.
We're getting fucked by, the issues in Europe with, monopoly and all that kind of stuff. People are hammering us from the Linux side of things. And people are... The open XML thing has been one hell of a massive discussion as well. That's not gone down well with Microsoft as well. So you can imagine all of these problems that Microsoft are facing all are broadly based around the concept of interoperability.
I think there's kind
so
of...
they've realised they need to fucking move forward with it.
A third point that Adam just made about the mixed environments, and I think this is all to do with the server.
Oh, God.
Because servers have become very much Microsoft and Linux are together, and if you're in that situation, then you need the interoperability. Otherwise, people throw away the expensive stuff.
It's something. At one time, interoperability just enabled you to move from other platforms to Microsoft. Yes. What they're doing now is going to be the opposite, which is why they're so scared.
They kind of realise there's this huge amount of market where people are running both, and they need to be able to play.
They were so like interoperable with Novell.
That what they're thinking instead of. I don't think they're trying to allow you to move away from Microsoft. I think what they're doing is trying to make you retain Microsoft products.
Yeah, they're kind of shore up that market. Yeah.
I don't necessarily know. When we went down to the Microsoft people, one of the things that we talked about was this kind of interoperability thing. The point being that you ought to be able to switch out any part of the Microsoft stack. So pulling in one Microsoft product doesn't mean you have to pull in all the rest. Because it means that if you've
and
got,
we've seen that happen,
if,
haven't
if
we?
You've got Linux on the servers, for example, it, you should still be able to choose to put Outlook on everyone's desktop because you think Outlook's the best mail client, even if you don't
you
think Exchange.
You can't have that without Exchange. And
precisely,
you can't have Exchange
I mean,
there
you are. They have got better. But if you're going to say we're not running our servers on Windows, then you're in much less of a compelling position to put Windows on your desktop. So, and you want to be able to say to them, look, you do a good product in, say you like Exchange. You want to be able to say, look, you do a good product in Exchange. We like it, we want to use it, but we're using, I don't know, Max on the desktop, say. So we choose not to use Exchange as well.
This is an insane world you're describing.
We're trying to get them to see that it's not a question of selling the whole stack or not selling the whole stack. They ought to be able to sell products into any level of the stack.
The thing you've got to bear in mind as well is that, of course, Microsoft are going to be looking, I'd say, 5 or 10 years down the line, because, so for example, with the .NET thing, they would have realized that for this company-wide change, it's going to take years to implement that and huge amounts of money and staff time and investment.
Microsoft doesn't have.
And of course, but you can't turn a ship that big around in a short amount of time.
Especially not with that sort of installed by.
Well, so they're probably realizing that in 5 or 10 years, they're probably looking at analyst reports and probably looking where they're going. You said, Aid, that they're scared. One thing I find, just a while back, ago, okay. a few minutes ago. The thing I find amazing is when people say Microsoft is scared. I don't think they're scared.
I don't remember saying that.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
But it's like Microsoft aren't scared. They've got 90-odd% of the fucking market.
I think they
but they are.
Long term.
But I think that what they're doing is
not server market.
Not server market.
No, but
that's quite a significant point.
Sure. But what I'm saying is that Microsoft are hugely dominant in the software world. I don't think that they're scared, but what they are doing is naturally is that they're assessing the longevity of where their current strategy is moving forward, and they're planning for the next 5 or 10 years. They've realised that interoperability is a linchpin to that, I suspect.
I think they're trying to be alive to the idea that the way change happens is not gradual little creeping up over time. It's where the entire world changes in one go. So, they're not thinking, right, okay, we've got 90% of the desktop market and we've got, what, 60% of the server market or whatever, or 30%, something like that. The point is that what might change is that people stop using desktop computers. At which point their whole business model goes away. It's not a case of, you know, this year they've got 95% of the desktop market and next year it's 90 and the next year it's 85. It'll go from 95% to zero. If someone invents, you know, telepathy or glasses that you've used stuff on and they're not running Microsoft Windows, then suddenly their business could just vanish in like 2 years. That's the sort of, they're not scared of it, but they're trying to be alive to the possibility that dominance in one market doesn't necessarily guarantee you dominance in the next market. Because the way the world works is that it does tend to change
the
whole thing. The
way they can do that
thing,
though, is just like buying companies out that don't want to be bought out and then,
well, this being precisely the point, I don't think Microsoft are scared of Linux, but I think they might be a bit twitchy about the idea about what Google are doing, because Google are basically trying to make desktops irrelevant.
The thing is, as
and
well,
one
as
way to get into that is to buy Yahoo.
I think, and when the board say no, constructively get rid of most of the board.
Well, yeah, your flaw there though is that's business.
Right.
That's just the same as if Ford wanted to buy Vauxhall.
The thing is, as well,
I think General Motors owned Vauxhall already, but if Ford wanted to buy a car company, that's what they do. That's the way business is. If you want to buy their company and they refuse, then you try and get their board replaced, or you just offer more than the share price is worth or something, because that's what you want. That's bog standard. It's got nothing to do with the fact that they're software companies.
I think one thing that this interoperability thing is definitely spurred on by is, as well as government contracts, because governments, in many cases, will not move to a platform unless there are solid interoperability groundings there.
Yeah, which will be like
these days.
And they're very aware of the lock-in. So.
And I think that initially, like when we went to see Microsoft, which was what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And around that sort of time, interoperability, I think back then for them certainly, was a tip of the hat towards government contracts. I think that's the reason why they were talking a lot about it, because they realized that they're missing out on government contracts because they're not interoperable. But now I suspect that that's then spurred on the wider discussion, and that's where they stand now.
There are two interesting things about governments that don't apply to businesses. The first one is that governments aren't motivated to make pure hard-nosed business decisions. There's a moral edge to it as well, because they're serving their constituents rather than just trying to maximise profit. Governments are more alive to the idea of things like ODF, where you say, look, this kind of interoperability thing is important. A business can say, that doesn't matter to us. we're just going to give all of our people word. It doesn't matter. We don't care about interoperability and different things. But governments are obliged to take a slightly more moral stance on things, which is different to business. Yeah. And secondly, I think a lot more governments are becoming alive to the possibility that all of their secret internal stuff is being run by an American corporation.
Yeah, I think they've been quite aware of the fact that a lot of their money is going to an American corporation as well. And, you know, if you're an American government, that's fine.
An American government, because there may be more than one.
may be more than one,
You do get the impression, if you were a very large French company or Russian company or something, and someone said in a boardroom meeting, what would happen if the American government and Microsoft got together and turned off all of our computers? What would we do about that? Do you think they might do it? And someone went, well, there's probably only a 0.0001% chance they might do it, but it's still something we ought to think about.
Well, they don't have to turn it off. They just have to release an update, don't they?
Well, I think people are becoming more aware that it's something of a worry to have...
I don't think so.
I think there's a great fear from governments. An inherent fear that may not loom that large on a day-to-day basis, but it's always the back of your mind that...
The Chinese, I think, are worried about it.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be quite that significant. I mean, just Microsoft would just say, well, we've done a job support for XP or whatever, and then you suddenly, the whole government has to spend bucket loads of cash.
Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with it. That's got nothing to do with them being American. That's just anything to do with coming from one single large vendor.
You're relying on a single large vendor who is in no way under your control because they're a completely
Absolutely, but that's got nothing to do with the American government.
It's not specifically that they're American, but
it's not an anti-American thing, but it's just that they're a different company.
Yeah, I mean, there was Ross Anderson, the Cambridge professor, was talking about this sort of thing, and he said you can imagine a situation 15 years from now where the American president's got two buttons on his desk, one which fires the nuclear bombs and one which turns off all the PCs in China, and which one's going to be worse? And some bloke in the audience said, what about the button that turns off all the PCs in Europe? And everyone went, sort of laughed nervously.
I don't know. Oh, that sounds like conspiracy nutcase theory.
It is conspiracy nutcase theory.
You've got to have the conspiracy nutcases, otherwise...
Of course you do, but you don't necessarily have to pay attention to them.
But you need to know that you always need to know what the possible worst case
scenario is. I think that most governments...
It's part of a government's job to plan for the worst case scenario.
Of course, but I think it will be a tiny, tiny... Like, you'll be left out in the noise. It'll be fractional.
If word was all there was, then they just, suck it up. But if there's an option, and there's beginning to be an option now, there is a lot more kind of publicity. They are now aware they have options. And at that point, you have to sit down and say, well, you know, Word or ODF, which one do we go for? So, and then it becomes an issue.
So wrapping things up, it seems like our general consensus is, good move, Microsoft, but we want to see the fucking goods.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like, we all seem pretty cynical that they're actually going to pull this off.
Yeah.
But it's a step in the right direction.
I don't believe for a second that Microsoft do anything without a solid business reason. They're not doing this to be good citizens.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
Doing it because there's a business case.
Yeah. So where can they read those points? It's not at Microsoft.com.
I think it's Microsoft.com/presspass, and it'll be linked from there. It's the new interoperability something.
Would it also be linked from Microsoft.com/open source, which I didn't even know existed until today?
And there's Microsoft.com/interop as well.
Okay.
And possibly Microsoft.com/beard.
So, come through with the deal.
It'd be excellent if there was Microsoft.com/chin. And the chinny raccoon was there. That's when we'll realise they've changed.
I can't believe there's anyone who listens to the show who isn't aware of this, but Lug Radio Live USA is happening on the 12th and 13th of April in San Francisco, and you should go and buy some tickets.
Yes!
Lugradio.org/live.
How much would those tickets cost?
$10.
$10.
Roughly.
Do go and register. It really helps us know who's coming. So.
One of the things that our big push at the moment is for exhibitors to take part in the exhibition.
Yeah.
And we're going to run through some of the ones that we've got. If you want to exhibit your project... or you want to exhibit your company, you want to come along and show people stuff, talk about stuff, go email us at show@lugradio.org.
Don't bother contacting us.
show@lugradio.org, drop us an email.
It's free to exhibit, we should say.
Yes, you get a table, it's free.
You get a table and an audience, and possibly a power socket as well.
If you're lucky. It would also be very, very helpful if you could put the word exhibitor in your subject line, because we're getting an inbox swamp.
But we've got a good list so far. This is by all means the first release list, and Yep. And so we're gonna go through them. So the first one is Magnitude.
Right. Neos Technology.
Texas Instruments.
Sun.
O'Reilly.
SoCal. Really? Scale. The South California Linux Expo.
Computers for Our Kids.
Postgres.
Dice.
The San Francisco Linux User Group.
Excuse me. Google.
Bytesfree.org, who are a government thing.
GNOME.
Lyndon Labs, who do Second Life.
The Ontario Linux Fest.
OpenSUSE.
Frets on Fire.
OpenNMS.
One Course Source.
And Haiku, the BIOS implementation.
So this is the first list of about, what, 20, 22, 23, about there, something like that? 22. We're hoping to have another, probably...
Another 20 or so. We're
20 or so. So do get in touch if you want to exhibit. And we're not going to go through all the speakers, but we've got a great selection of speakers. Over 35 speakers are going to be there across three different stages.
Yep. So lugradio.org/live. Importantly, go there to register, go there to find out what's coming on.
It's going to be fucking brilliant!
So it's the end of the show. Time for the emails.
Yes. Indeed. Not many emails, though.
I feel quite emotional because I used to say that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You did it beautifully.
Thank you.
That's why he says it now, because he's your replacement. I was.
Is that how it works? Yeah. I got it right.
We should clarify as well, just before we move on, that we're recording the show on a Saturday, so we've not had that many emails since the last show because I'm going to be away next week. So. That's the reason why we're only doing a short selection of emails.
That doesn't actually explain why we've got less emails. What you should have said is the fact that we're recording the show earlier than usual.
I thought I just said that.
No, you just said it's on a Saturday.
Yeah. But anyway.
No, it's a Saturday, so we can't read
Chris,
as many
emails. Read an email.
Anyway, on to the emails.
Had an email from St. Aardvark the Carpeted, who's talking about tech support. Says, "Hello, Radio. I listened with interest to your discussion about dealing with phone support in episode 11. I used to do tech support for a small ISP, and thought I'd chip in. You discussed the frustration of being technically competent, yet still having to go through the usual questions, such as, is your computer plugged in?"
Ah, interesting.
Right.
So this guy's on the front line?
Was
on the front line, okay.
Was on the front line. So one of the problems with tech support is that the customer may know what they're talking about, and be quite sure what the problem is, but unless the support person actually has dealt with the customer before, she's no idea whether that's actually true or not. So the customer may be saying, "Yeah, it's definitely the MTU settings on my network card," but you've no idea whether they're just making that up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it depends on the customer to actually have the patience to go through it all one more time and not lie.
Right.
Such as when you say, "Is it plugged in?" to actually say yes and it actually be plugged in. So which customers is not guaranteed in my experience.
Right. So customers might be chuffing up the bong pole.
What? Yeah, whatever that means, they might be wrong. Yeah.
Chopping up the bong pole. I'm not sure it's been said before, but I know what it means, and that's all it means. I just did an Adam.
That's one of my favourite sentence that you've ever said. So, chopping up the bong pole.
Is there more
bigger problems than you might think? The more clued in the customer thinks they are, the worse it can be. For example, a customer who calls with no DSL connection, convinced that the MTU on the network card is the problem. However, tech support needs to eliminate other things such as, the modem lights are on, the phone cable is plugged in, the network cable, etc., etc., before going on to the state of the Ethernet card.
Yeah.
Because MTU sizes are always changing, aren't they?
Well, exactly. Each of these things is a pain, but they have to be gone through before you can move on, because they're not more likely to be the cause.
The point,
exactly. I can't believe they wrote
to you.
So the point is that if you're a tech support guy, you can't tell the difference between someone who genuinely knows what they're doing and someone who thinks they know what they're doing, but is in fact an idiot.
Which is what we
just assume clue less than zero.
Yeah, so essentially you have to assume they're clueless because they may be talking the talk, but know nothing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So that was from St. Aardvark the Carpenter.
Who then goes on to say, "Great show, keep up the good work, visit my blog, or I'll call your little girls." So I'm not reading out the URL for that.
Lose.
They are all little girls.
Anyway, next.
So it's over to me.
We're passing the laptop round.
Right.
Can you read that?
I can read that. This is Peter Savage. Guys, I feel like I'm there, and it's scary. Hey guys, great show, as always, but I must admit, it's been a good 6 months or so before I listened to my last Lug Radio episode, and things have changed. What the grep? What the grep is it? Whatever. what the grep is with ultra-wide stereo experience?
Ah.
I feel rather nervous sat with Chris breathing in my left ear, Adam giggling in my right, and Bacon and Ack standing in guard in front of me. Also, it means that if I only have one earphone, such as when I'm at work, I only really get a choice. I get a choice either to get very feeble Chris, who never argues back when receiving a shooing. Interesting spelling of shooing. Not sure I approve of that, but...
Is it clown shooing?
Fuck off. Or a formidable army of anti-server protesters seemingly shouting through a brick wall. Stereo is a nice effect, but not so wide, please. Else I'll be forced to convert everything to mono, not the programming environment, of course, before putting it on my N810. What? P.S., what happened to the audio this time? The quality of the MP3? Yes, MP3 shouldn't sound like people are gargling TCP. Right. Not the protocol.
Here's the thing. Right.
Of course, cool if you
we had it. Lots and lots of people who said it would be much better if the show was in stereo, because it'd be easier to understand, especially for people who aren't native English speakers. They find that we talk over one another a lot, and stereo would help.
No, we don't.
And changing to stereo is easier than us deciding not to talk over each other.
Yes, so...
That is basically an unfixable problem.
So...
Won't fix.
So we decided to go for stereo in the last show. So there are two things with it. First of all, we're not exactly sure where people should be panned to, left and right, which is Jono's thing.
Yep.
And then... It was the first time I'd ever encoded the MP3s and OGs in stereo rather than mono.
So, looking at both of those problems in turn,
yeah,
right. In terms of the stereo panning, some people complained the fact that it was panned too wide. So I basically put Ack and me in the middle because
you're more important.
Because without
because you were doing the work.
One thing that's been reasonably acknowledged is the fact that Ack and I tend to sometimes dominate much of the discussion. So it makes sense to put the most common two voices in the middle, right? And then Adam and Chris slightly out. Now, people seem to think that it was panned right to the left and right to the right, and right to the right, but it wasn't. Adam and Chris are in the middle of each of the left and the right, fields. But so naturally, you can actually hear a bit of everybody in each channel. But some people felt like it was panned too far, so I am going to try and bring it in a little bit further. But if you bring it in too far, we'll all be in the middle, and then it'll be mono. Which is fucking pointless, right? So, I am going to, on this show...
So you're saying that Miguel's project is pointless?
I don't believe I did say that.
That's the headline for the episode.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring it in a little bit further, and hopefully it'll sound it. But we do like your feedback. Do let us know if it sounds good. But that's the, in terms of where everything's panned, I'm going to experiment. In terms of people who say, you know, oh, well, I've got one earphone and whatever, we thought about that, and that's what's kept us from doing it for the last 4 years. But then we thought, you know what? Fucking fix your speakers, right? You know? If you've got... Pete! I know Pete, right? Buy some fucking headphones that work, right?
I think he's
doing... Oh, when I were a lad, I'll add one fucking headphone.
I think he's doing it discreetly in one ear at work.
Fucking stop piking off at work, right?
The point here is, as Jono says, we have resisted stereo precisely because there might be people who've only got one earphone or whatever, but... What we're probably going to do is do the low quality ones, the low quality files mono, and the high quality files stereo.
Yeah.
So if you're determined that you must have mono, then you're welcome to download the low quality files, and that'll be fine. In terms of the quality of the encoding,
yes, next thing.
Quite a few people said that there were audio artifacts. Pete says it sounds like we're gargling TCP, whatever. Apparently not on the OGs, just on the MP3s, and I believe you. That's fine. LAME is immensely complicated to use, and. I was doing mode mono before, which is just -MM, nice and easy. And then I thought, right, okay, stereo, presumably -MS for stereo. And I went, look, there's like 9 different kinds of stereo, and I don't know what any of them mean.
Yeah.
So
basically, just took a guess, right?
So yeah. So we are kind of
experimenting. Did you also have minus gargle minus TCP?
Zalio had like a rant against what's it called, ultra wide. Stereo passover filter bollocks or whatever it
is. Yeah, I don't understand any of this stuff.
Why can't it just be like mono or stereo?
The big problem I have is that when I say to people, okay, I don't know what to do, can people help me out? People don't very much. We did get some help on the forums about previous audio issues, and that was helpful, about it not working on various people's media players. So, if you know about all this stereo bollocks, come and talk to me, and I'm quite happy to give people the master MP3 from the last show.
We probably need somebody with a media degree.
Well, yeah, you know, but he wants to be a media degree from some kind of competent university, so they actually learn something. Rather than a media degree printed on bog roll like Jonna.
Right.
Anyway, if you know about stereo and stuff, philosophy and computer science, thank you.
Chemistry failure.
Yes. What's your point?
That you're a chemistry failure.
Because chemistry's bollocks.
And philosophy is.
Anyway, if you know about stereo, please come to the forums and contact me, and I will supply you with the master MP3, and then you can go away and experiment and work out what the encoding parameters should be.
It's going to take us a couple of shows to get it right, so your feedback is very, very useful.
As I understand it, people who didn't like the MP3, the OG is fine.
Yeah.
Not that helps you if you want to play it on the MP3 player in your car, but, you know.
Yeah, if you stopped hating freedom. Anyway, next email.
And threw away all your devices and bought new devices.
Anyway, next email is from Felon Whitley, who's a...
Whitley?
Oh, Whitley, sorry. Yes, Felon Whitley, who's a friend of the show and regular listener. The subject is 3D heavy breathing. This is moving on from the concept of stereo.
Everyone immediately backs off the mic at that moment.
Everyone literally did.
Yes.
Like moths, right?
Should have made.
Fucking clown shoes. Clown shoes has got a moth problem.
Everyone's taking the piss out of me all day today about my shoes.
Adam has got fucking clown shoes on.
And there is video of the clown shoes.
And he arrived on a fire engine this morning.
Very, very small fire engine.
Of tinsel.
This is all lies.
So he's now known as fucking clown shoes.
Fucking clown shoes.
I'll be careful, he might throw like a bucket of glitter over you or something.
God.
All quick duck, he's got a ladder.
Oh, now he's trapped in a glass box.
Read the fucking email.
Anyway, fucking clown shoes. So Felham says, "Hi lads, thanks for your new stereo recording. It sounds great." But I was
incidentally, it sounds great. Not it sounds bollocks and everyone's pan too wide. It sounds great. So yeah. Thank you, Felham.
Thank you, Felham. Makes a fucking change.
We got repeatedly bollocked by email about
this. We tried to do something nice and people complained.
Pete Savage's email is merely representative of the thunderous Niagara volume of bollocking that we received.
I think they gave you some constructive criticism.
No, there was some unconstructive criticism. No,
yeah. There's quite a lot of it.
There was some downright mean criticism.
And then you guys have never been mean to anyone else.
We're definitely lovely.
And then rather ironically, the Hashlug Radio guys accuse us of copying them. And they do a podcast about us.
It's a bit rich, isn't
sweet,
it?
Sweet, sweet irony. Anyway, so he says, I was in my flat on my own listening to it, and whichever of you bastards keeps heavy breathing into the mic kept making me think there was some kind of psycho about to bury a hatchet in my back. Nice one.
Is that a euphemism?
So now, I think I know who's the heavy breather.
Historically.
Historically, it seems to be Mr. Langridge. He's been repeatedly bollocked about his heavy breathing, and to be fair to him, it has improved.
Yes, thank you.
Although we've discovered,
however, that
fucking clown shoes may be a heavy breather as well.
It's because I was caught out today. It's possibly because the height my microphone sits at is obviously just beneath my nostrils, which are slightly vacuous.
How do the rest of us speak into a microphone?
You've got smaller nostrils.
You've got vacuous nostrils.
Or maybe we've got Picasso faces.
Picasso faces.
So I noticed this when I was mixing the show into stereo, is that you do hear a lot more stuff in the studio. Like, you could hear people tapping mic stands a little bit more on people. Because obviously
spinning drums.
We don't have a lot of room in the studio, so like feet tend to be sat on mic stands and stuff like that. So you will hear a little bit more because there's higher definition.
And all of Jono's chairs are squeaky.
Everything squeaks. Everything squeaks,
including Axe ass,
including Adam's fire engine.
I'm going to turn him on a little fire engine next week.
Beep beep.
Now that I'd
like
to see.
Ding, 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 ding.
So next email.
Right, okay, next email is from Michael Sheldon, Elio from the forums, who says, following on from Kat and Dave's email inquiring about babies at Lug Radio Live, I think you chaps should make some Lug Radio-themed baby clothes to give to any parents brave enough to expose their poor, innocent children to the seedy underbelly of internet culture that is Lug Radio Live.
Seedy no. underbelly?
Well,
a bit harsh,
yeah, it's harsh but fair.
No, I think he's
so if I
reasonable.
Now do PWD, it'll say underbelly, right?
PWCD.
For God's sake.
There's a moment where everyone sits there and tries to work out the joke.
Yeah. Fucking Roger's pissing himself.
Right, and he came in with a few suggestions for slogans, but if you've got any more, we'd like to hear what you think we should put on a Lug Radio Baby Grow. But
you're never going to beat the one that's already out there on ThinkGeek that says, I like TCP/IP, but mostly IP.
That's quite good. No, he reckons we should have one that says, I was exposed to an endless stream of subpar knob gags and all I got was scarred for life.
It's the one there that says, bolder than aid.
Yeah, so do you want to read them out, Ak?
Yeah, it's bolder than aid or shorter than Matt. Chubbier than Ak. Fuck you,
Elio. Fuck boy.
Louder than Jono.
Fuck you.
Also more self-promoting than Jono.
Fuck you.
Clownier than Sweet. Oh, no, it doesn't say that. Sweeter than Sweet.
Poor Chris.
The last one.
Producing more shit than the proctologist. I am a Lug Radio baby. That'd be excellent.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Is that the first Lug Radio baby that we know of?
Two. Cat and Dave's.
Russ and Jen.
And they
Matthew,
put one out.
Matthew
as well.
Revell.
Revell.
Yeah, Matthew P. Revell Esquire.
Mr. Ben. I remember Matt, yeah.
Trodden
yeah,
once.
Met him once twice, yeah.
Oh, we must not forget the idea. Do you remember the, Jono points at Ak, the idea for Lug Radio Live regarding the,
I do.
Which idea?
The height thing.
Yes. Right. We mustn't forget that. Anyway. Right. Thank you, Elio, for those. We would like to hear your suggestions for what should go on a Lug Radio Baby Grow.
Yes. So there we go.
Wing it over.
Are you reading?
I'll have a go.
From screen or from laptop?
Screen.
All right. Hang on.
I can't be asked to
hold
stuff.
Adam opens a new session. They just keep coming, don't they?
This is an email from Sean Ellis, and Sean Ellis is the guy that won the EPC in the last show. He says, Jono, Ak, Chris and Adam, thanks for nominating my unworthy video as the winner of the EPC competition. My wife was suitably supportive. You won, she said, with that. Know your audience, I say. You asked for my address. It would be great if you could mail it to me at work.
You don't have to read that bit out.
Censored.
We have very carefully censored the guy's address out of this email that we're reading so Jono doesn't read it on air by accident.
Alternatively, my home address is... censored. Wisely. I hope that Mr. Proctor managed to pack it away correctly, hopefully in less time than it took Ak to pack the N800 from the Getting High.
Yeah,
right, bastard. Now here's
anyway, moving on.
No, you shut the fuck up, Bacon, right? Mr. Ellis, I don't know how you've come up with this misapprehension, but it wasn't me who was sending out the N800, it was Bacon. Perhaps you ought to apologise on air again for taking 6 months to send the N800.
How many times do I have to apologise for this?
I think just you should apologise. Really. I think you should apologise for as long as you procrastinated about sending it for.
I went to a friend's funeral, right? I was comforting a friend. That's
for
the
six
reason.
Months.
For six. It was a big fucking funeral.
Bullshit.
It may not have entirely happened.
You expect us to believe you've got friends.
I'm perfectly prepared to believe that he had a friend and then the friend killed themselves.
He is fucking hoping.
Right,
That was a bit fucking.
Jono looks at aid.
I wouldn't worry. Ak's got the cancer. Anyway.
While everybody else is enjoying themselves, I'll wrap up the email segment. If you should read this out, please can I remind certain people not to read out my address.
See you above.
And may also say a big hello to censored way up there in the world. No, not really.
That's not
really.
Not very nice.
No, I'm just teasing. I think that says Alex Terse or Alex Tears.
Turd.
Not Alex Turd.
Big hello to Alex Tears.
No, it's going to be a small one.
Or Tears or something.
Or Tears.
Way up in the wilds of Scotland.
It's Alex Arse.
Alex Tears.
Let's not take the piss out of the man's name.
Why?
Does it say that anyway?
We're afraid of Lug Radio humour, actually.
Anyway.
Alex Tears.
So Sean Ellis finishes up by saying, keep up the great work, hope the pimping brings in a few more listeners, and thanks again.
Now thanks to you, Sean Ellis.
I've managed to pack up the EPC into the box, eventually. Took me all evening to get it back into a box.
It's like playing
all evening?
Yeah, it's...
What, are you some kind of ham-fisted, incompetent
nincompoop? I have no idea how
they
fit these things in the box.
I tried.
They bend space and time to get these things in the box. It's impossible.
It's 3D Tetris.
Bends space and time.
I did. That's how I managed to get it in eventually. But I haven't posted it yet. I haven't managed to post
space
it yet.
And time. To
there
pack
no
a small computer into a fucking cardboard
box. There is no
box.
Way this stuff fits in the box. Oh, God knows how they do it.
Allegedly,
well,
you have
we
to take
do
the
know because they bend
up.
Space and time.
Off. Yeah, you take the battery off, but there's still not enough
Chris,
space
yeah.
in the box.
You weren't accidentally putting your laptop into the box, were you?
No.
I was putting easy shock on his face then for a second. He's like, hang on a
minute. There was a brief moment of working out whether I'd put my EPC in the box. No.
Was it
the
one?
I've worked out why it didn't fit.
I've tried to put my shoes in the box at the same time.
The thing is, Chris has also got an EPC himself, so it'd be interesting to see. When Sean Ellis receives his EPC, he'll probably find a disgusting amount of proctological porn on it.
No, I reset it to factory default before I sent it to
/  get involved.
Incidentally, everyone should definitely go and look at lugradio.org/pimpmylugradio for the entries and look at the one about Chris.
Amusing, but not particularly suitable for its purpose, unfortunately. Yeah,
not safe for work, I think it's fair to say, that one.
Not safe for eyeballs. Let's wrap this up. So, thank you for the emails.
Pass me the paper.
We need to pick the winner, and I think we have picked the winner of the T-shirt.
It's Brother Felim Whiteley.
Yes, Felim Whiteley, thank you for your heavy breathing email.
Send us your address and the size of T-shirt
and
you
the
want.
Size. And it will
don't send us a line that says censored, because that's going to confuse Jono.
It will. So, the usual, go to forums.lugradio.org, go to show@lugradio.org,
IRC.
Forums.lugradio.org for the forums. Send your emails to show@lugradio.org. Go to #lugradio on Freenode. The clan. Clan.lugradio.
Well, you've done this whole bit just all by yourself.
I know.
I'm so proud of
what
you
else
right
have
now.
We got?
We've done the clan, haven't we? This is falling to pieces, isn't it?
That's it, really. Just go to lugradio.org and follow loads
and
of
click
links.
On shit. And importantly, Lugradio Live. Go to lugradio.org/live.
Come to Lugradio Live.
Come to Lugradio Live in the US. It's going to be fucking brilliant. Go and register and get yourself a ticket. So, thank you. It's been good. Aid, it's been good to have you on the show.
Thanks, man. Yes. Good to be back.
And thanks to Uja for videoing it as well.
Yeah. So, well, you probably won't be saying that when you put it on the internet and everyone can
shout,
see the
shout out hello.
Hello.
Louder.
Hello.
That was a good manly voice.
It was.
I'm a man.
Aid.
That'll be it then.
Aid, shove that mic in front of his face for just 1 second. Hello, Uja.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, I did indeed.
You're not saying very much.
No, I'm not saying very much.
Are you nervous?
Not really.
Why? You're in the fucking company of legends.
Yeah, I saw you last night, though.
With Shakira.
Oh, yes, with Shakira, yeah.
Did you enjoy the Lug Radio 4th birthday celebration?
Yeah, it was really good fun.
Apart from that fucking awful red stuff that someone made us drink. Who bought the red stuff?
I did.
The red stuff wasn't as bad
oh,
as
no,
the white
that's
stuff.
Red stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought the white stuff was yummy scrumptious,
well,
to be honest.
It was tasty, did look a bit dodgy.
They were indeed horrendously drunk in Wolverhampton and... quite embarrassing.
Yes, it was.
To those of us who are sober.
Well, you know, some of us are just in love, aren't we, and distracted by things. Love is in the air. Sorry, ladies. Chris is taken. I believe Chris just mouthed the word ant to me.
The kill phase, yeah.
Right, cool. Let's wrap it up.
See you soon.
See you soon.
Goodbye.